Welcome to The Read-Along,
a mini book club for your ears.
I'm your host, Scott.
I'm your other host, Anita.
And join us on a journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
So in chapter 21 of The Word is Murder...
Come on.
By Anthony Horowitz.
You're allowed to keep the goofy things.
We caught up with Damien Cowper's past at RADA.
Yes.
And learned a little bit more about some of his castmates.
And his life at theater school.
Indeed. And it gave Anthony Horowitz an aha moment.
Sure did.
And he foolishly made plans to follow up on that.
They sure were.
Which we get into in chapter 22, Behind the Mask. It's nice to be right.
I thought so too. That was good.
Now, Anita has gone on record saying that she likes to kind of take a book as it's going, and that's a little different from my approach, which appears to be trying to outsmart the book. Or at least pick up the clues that the book is laying down and try to piece together the puzzle before the book gives me the answer.
Yeah. I don't know if that's outsmarting the book. That's trying to be as smart as the book.
Indeed. And in this case, we do appear to have stumbled upon a correct, not irresponsible accusation. Several chapters before the picture, as it were revealed to us.
Turns out we are roughly as smart as this book.
Indeed. And to be fair, the book did throw us for some loops.
Yep.
And I mean, we'll talk about this probably more in our recap episode.
Yeah.
But we were fairly convinced of some different solutions before we hit upon the right one.
Yep.
But we will discuss that more.
When we get there.
Yes. For now, at the very least, Anthony Horowitz has made some plans. And he heads over to the mortuary.
Yeah, he's basically going to the morgue.
Of Cornwallis and Sons. To have a conversation with Robert Cornwallis.
Yes.
Whom is indeed the person he recognized from that photo.
Who is indeed Dan Roberts.
Well, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but yes. Spoiler alert.
Not very much.
Robert Cornwallis is indeed Dan Roberts. Stage name, Dan Roberts.
Yes. Say you were right, you win some manner of prize.
Sure. Cornwallis kind of starts us off on the wrong foot, actually. Horowitz comes in, and Cornwallis is already fixing him a drink. He immediately launches into, oh, I know who you are now. You're Anthony Horowitz, the writer. You didn't tell me. I thought you were just some detective guy. And I could tell immediately that that was not good for Horowitz.
Felt a little wrong, did it?
Well, not just did it feel wrong, it meant that Cornwallis was in command of the situation right from hop. Horowitz was walking into the lion's den, and the lion was waiting for him in his den and was hungry. And Horowitz, the thing is, and this is possibly a credit to Anthony Horowitz, the writer, is that he sets himself up as a real idiot here. And I can't have been the only reader in this chapter who was just, like, practically screaming at him. That he was being very stupid. That could see what was coming a mile away.
How did you not know that? How did you not put those pieces together? What are you doing? Get out of there! Ah!
And Cornwallis even manages to get Horowitz to tip a lot of information here right off the cuff. Like, Horowitz admits that Hawthorne has no idea that he's there. He, like, blunders right into, oh, I know that you're Dan Roberts.
But I don't know that you're a horrible murderer, so I'm just gonna waltz right in.
And Cornwallis, to his credit, kind of dissembles at first a little bit. He lies about his feelings about his time at RADA. He lies about the fact that he didn't think his relationship with Damien Cowper was relevant, which is all stuff that, I mean, is contradicted by earlier conversations with him in the book.
Yeah.
And then he even suggests that he only just remembered about the situation in Deal. And clearly this is all a lie.
Oh, yeah. Blatant lies.
He also pulls a super power move on Horowitz here, too, when he sits on the edge of the desk and kind of looms over him.
Wow, he is kind of crazy.
Oh, no, he's totally insane, as we learn by about 50% through this chapter.
Oh, yeah, not even.
We had surmised in an earlier conversation about the possible motive of why Robert Cornwallis, a.k.a. Dan Roberts, may have committed these murders. And the solution we had posited was that he was totally crazy, basically.
Yeah.
And obsessed with his theatrical career. And for the record, we were 100% correct about that. In fact, we may have understated how crazy he was.
It's kind of funny. I was thinking about it after we had recorded. And the crazy hypothesis actually made the most sense. Because you couldn't logic it away any other way. The part that, the little piece that I was missing was Diana's funeral. Because there was a comment early on in the book that she knew she was going to die, which led me to believe she knew she was going to die, therefore she planned her funeral. You and I had a big argument about it. Turns out she knew she was going to die in the way that everyone knows, that someday they are going to die. And out of coincidence, she happened to pick the wrong funeral parlor.
That's true to an extent, but again, I think that she felt her death was imminent. I think she, and this may be confirmed or denied as we move forward over the next, over the closing chapters of the book. But I think that she legitimately felt that the Godwins, specifically Alan Godwin, meant her ill and had threatened her cat. And her cat happened to get out of the house and happened to get lost in the neighbor's house. And that confirmed to her her worst fears, that her life was imminently in danger. And so just in case, she went and she got her affairs in order. And unfortunately, it was that act of getting her affairs in order that actually led to her death.
So that's the connection with Deal.
Yeah,
is
I
that
think
she was being harassed, not necessarily threatened. Well, maybe threatened, but mostly harassed.
Yeah.
And that led her
to her death.
To her death. It led her to Cornwallis, who was like, oh, I can kill this lady.
Yeah, like it was cause and effect. It was the situation in Deal had come back to haunt her, and Alan Godwin made the wrong threat at the wrong time, and Mr. Tibbs happened to disappear at that moment, and that's what led her into the clutches of a psychotic murderer.
In that case, the cat is the linchpin here, because out of coincidence, when Mr. Tibbs went missing, she panicked. And yeah, horrible butterfly effect from there on.
Yeah, so Hawthorne was not wrong when he said Mr. Tibbs's disappearance is what set everything in motion.
Correct.
But what Mr. Tibbs's disappearance actually did was just spook a woman into the hands of a murderer.
Yes, which is now, very unfortunate.
Now, Horowitz doesn't learn much of this until he gets downstairs. And he gets downstairs via the means of being drugged by Robert Cornwallis.
Yeah, I shouldn't have had that coffee.
Well, you know, a mortician probably has access to some drugs that could numb the body.
Probably.
And maybe you shouldn't just drink the coffee that a murder suspect hands you that you also note he put stuff in.
Sugar without him noticing? Or without him asking, I should say?
Yeah, maybe don't do that. But Horowitz, again, kind of an idiot.
This is
his first time confronting a murderer.
A real murderer.
And, yeah, he just kind of lets himself get caught.
He sort of stumbled into it.
And Cornwallis jostles him downstairs to the morgue, where he fully intends to murder Anthony Horowitz, acclaimed writer.
Yep.
Because Horowitz knows too much.
Also, Cornwallis is crazy.
Well, yes. And his full crazy actually comes into stark relief here.
Cornwallis can't contain his crazy anymore. You can hear it when he speaks, how he gets frustrated and louder and higher at the ends of his sentences and then has to recollect himself. His Mr. Hyde is trying to escape and he can't contain him any longer.
Well, it's more than that, because the depth of his psychosis reveals itself in the villain monologue he gives. It's a common trope. You've got the killer, he's got you in his clutches, and he goes, like, before I kill you, Mr. Bond.
Yeah, he cannot resist, he must reveal his evil plan, because he needs someone to appreciate it.
But it works here, and the reason it works here is because Robert Cornwallis, a.k.a. Dan Roberts, is an actor.
He is a performer. Down to his very soul, he is a performer.
And this is the performance of his lifetime. It's the performance he's been waiting to have. And you can tell that he's been waiting to deliver this monologue to someone. This This is his moment in the spotlight.
He is acting.
And who better for him to deliver it to than to acclaimed author Anthony Horowitz? So it works here, but it also demonstrates how crazy this person is.
Oh, right mad. Again, like I said before, I feel really bad for his family. He's been faking it for, what, 12 years now?
Longer, really, because you have to take into account his extended family. And I suppose this is as good a time to actually discuss the real history of Robert Cornwallis at this juncture. Robert Cornwallis was not a happy child.
No, poor thing. I felt bad for him.
Yeah, it's sympathetic, but at the same time, he done gone too far.
Oh, no, like, he explains that why he went crazy. It doesn't excuse his crazy.
No.
It just explains it.
But he comes from a family of undertakers, going back generations.
We knew that at the beginning.
And alas, so too does all of the people that he went to school with and all of his childhood acquaintances. They all knew that he was the undertaker's kid. And that kind of left a stain on him.
Yeah.
It didn't help that his family just expected him to become an undertaker like all of them, even though he discovered that he had a passion for theater.
And a skill for it.
Yeah. Like, he says he was good, and by all accounts...
He was.
He was good.
Yeah.
He was called back twice for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
You don't get called back twice for Pirates of the Caribbean if you're nobody.
Right.
He was cast as Hamlet at RADA.
And then he got sick.
And almost certainly he got sick by accident.
Yes. But he doesn't see it that way because this is where things take a turn.
Yeah, he blames, as we suspected, Amanda Lee and Damien Cowper for colluding to get him ill.
Absolutely.
And while Damien certainly may have coveted the role, I can't help but think that it was just a coincidence that he took personally.
Like, how, or it just doesn't seem right that Damien was that jealous that he would have concocted this, for lack of a better word, cockamamie scheme. It's like, okay, I'm going to get my girlfriend sick and get her to make out with this guy on the chances that he'll get sick, and then I'll get the role.
Yeah, that seems convoluted.
First of all, that's a terrible master plan because you're counting on two people's immune systems. Second of all, that's a terrible plan because you're getting someone you're dating sick, which means you might get sick. Just, it's a terrible plan all the way around.
Yeah, no, which strongly implies it's not a plan.
Agreed.
And that Dan probably, or rather Robert Cornwallis, did actually accidentally get sick.
Yep.
But because it threw off his life plan, he took it personally because Damien is admittedly a bit of a manipulative and ambitious person.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk.
And Amanda probably was kind of innocent in all of it, but did get him sick with mononucleosis at the wrong possible moment.
Yeah.
And so he just focused his disappointment and his rage on, well, clearly this was a plan against me.
Yeah, clearly it was on purpose.
And I will have revenge.
What does it mean?
It means omerta. It means rewenge.
Because this is where he goes crazy.
Basically, yeah. Although the crazy certainly seems to have festered then over the following years. As his
sure did.
Acting career floundered and he finally just gave up and became an undertaker after all. And then got into a marriage of necessity and had children that are there. And he even says that he fully intends to sabotage his son's acting career.
Yeah, to save him from that hell, I believe is what he said.
Although I read it more as because I would be jealous if he succeeded where I failed.
Quite possibly.
Almost certainly.
The line he says is to save him from that horrible life or whatever.
A horrible life that he himself has admitted was the best 3 years of his life.
Yeah.
He would be jealous if his son succeeded where he failed. If he had to become an undertaker, his son is going to have to become an undertaker.
Well, his jealousy does fuel his madness, so there you go.
Now, through all this ranting and raving, he also confesses to Horowitz that he has killed three people.
Yep.
He murdered Amanda Lee. And apparently her body is chopped up and hidden in a couple different caskets.
Seven different graves, I think he said.
And he did indeed follow Mrs. Cowper home that night and strangle her.
Yep.
And used that to lure Damien back to his clutches so that he could murder him in his apartment.
Yep.
Which he did with a knife.
Because he's crazy.
Indeed. And as he monologues, he is certainly not willing to broke any heckling either, as he proves that he's capable with a knife, not just against Damien Cowper, but also by stabbing Anthony Horowitz a few times.
Yep, with two scalpels.
But before he is able to deliver a killing blow with the third, who should burst in through the door?
Our quote-unquote hero?
Hawthorne shows up just in the nick of time.
Well, and thank goodness, right? Because somebody had to come and save Horowitz.
Well, I mean, Horowitz even tells Cornwallis, like, look, my wife and my assistant know I'm here, and he doesn't care. And he's like, if you kill me, Hawthorne will know that you did it. He probably already knows that you killed those other people. Like, you're not getting away from him. And Cornwallis is just not interested in hearing that either.
No, I've confessed to you, so now you must die. And if someone else comes, I guess I'll have to kill them too.
And but when someone else comes, Cornwallis decides rather he will take the more dramatic approach.
Of course he does.
And runs the scalpel across his own neck.
Ew.
He will not be taken alive.
Blech.
And so the actor perishes in his spotlight.
In his dramatic fashion.
And Horowitz admits that for the first time in this book, he's actually happy to see Hawthorne.
Right? Well, I would be too if someone managed to come save my life.
And that's around the point where he passes out.
Yeah.
And the chapter draws, and the curtain closes
now
on our funeral director.
Here's the thing. We know he survives, because A, we have two chapters left, and B, this book is written in first person.
Oh yeah, he wrote the book.
So we know he survived because he had to write the book.
Indeed.
So I'm not particularly worried that he's dead.
Oh, no. Nor am I.
I am upset that he got stabbed.
Well, yes.
That's not cool.
That is not cool.
But we have two whole chapters left. So we have a denouement and an epilogue?
Well, there's still a little mystery left.
A little bit.
Because while we now know what befell the Cowpers and an older case against Amanda Lee...
Mm-hmm.
Hawthorne still hasn't explained all of the pieces that he was following, and certainly he'll need to explain to Horowitz how he figured out Robert Cornwallis was the killer halfway through this book. And also, we still don't know what happened to the judge's house.
Right?
Yeah.
I see a very loose connection to what happened in Deal. So yeah, I would really like him to explain why they had to go do all of that re-research.
Well, again, I suspect that it was Hawthorne was zeroing in on Cornwallis, but needed to eliminate the other suspects. And so unearthing the truth about Deal was his way of confirming to himself that indeed Mary O'Brien and Alan Godwin, and likely Judith Godwin and Jeremy Godwin, had nothing to do with the murders. Or at least were only tangentially related to the murders.
Yeah, all right.
And then same with Grace Lovell. Go to Grace Lovell's house and get her confession out of her about what was going on with her relationship with Damien, because that confirms that she had no real motive to kill him, and gets that out of the way, and now we can remove her as a suspect. And so he may have had a target on Robert Cornwallis, but he still needed to eliminate the other suspects first before he went over and threw his damning accusation down, right?
Hmm. So he didn't outright say it, but do you think Cornwallis went after the judge to throw suspicion off of himself?
Maybe. He certainly knew stuff about Deal, but I'm beginning to think that you may have been right a few chapters ago when you suggested it was a red herring.
It might also be.
Or it may be tangentially related to something else. Who knows? You had suggested maybe the judge arsoned his own house because he was guilty about something else.
Maybe. The thing about a murder mystery, especially one like this, is that you have to dig up a lot of secrets to get to the truth.
Yeah, and I think that we maybe have discussed this in a previous chapter, too, where...
I'm positive we did.
The reason why all the dark secrets come to a light in a murder mystery is because your suspects all have to be suspicious. And to be suspicious, they all have to have secrets that they're willing to lie about and hide so that the detective has reason to find them suspicious.
Yes.
And then to eliminate them as murder suspects, you have to dredge up their secret.
Yeah, the secret has to come to light to prove
that they were innocent.
Yeah, to prove their innocence, even though they're probably guilty of something else,
yeah.
Even if it's not a criminal activity.
Indeed. And again,
especially if it's not a criminal activity.
Indeed. And again, I'm fairly confident we may have touched on that in a previous chapter.
I'm confident we did too.
When you've been recording about a book for 20 weeks, sometimes you forget some of the stuff you were talking about in a previous chapter. But it all relates together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no real need for an accusing parlor.
No.
Because our fateful accusing parlor from the last two chapters was correct, and our culprit has revealed himself and is now dead. So
yeah. I honestly wasn't expecting this chapter to be the climax of the story. Like, he got there, and he was talking to Cornwallis, and I went, oh, this escalated quickly. Oh, here we go. I wasn't expecting it for, like, I don't know, maybe the next chapter, because it's closer to the end?
No, fair enough.
I didn't expect it to get so big so quick.
If I were to venture a guess, my guess is next chapter is more a wrap-up of the mystery, and the chapter after kind of closes this chapter of Horowitz's relationship with Hawthorne, but also sets up for him going off on another adventure with Hawthorne.
Quite possibly.
And that is more of the sequel hook,
so
shall we say.
So what you're suggesting is the next two chapters are going to be denouement and epilogue.
Yeah.
All right. We will called it out. First. That's all I'm saying.
No, you did.
Called it first.
But we'll find that out as we read forward. Next chapter, chapter 23, is visiting hours. So probably Horowitz is recovering from his brush with fame.
If I had to wager a guess, I'd say we wake up in a hospital.
Probably. And Hawthorne tells him all the things while he's convalescing.
Also probably.
Yes.
And then we have a whole story.
Indeed. So we'll see if we have a whole story by the end of next chapter.
That'd be nice. Been waiting all book for the whole story.
In the meantime, drop us a line.
Yes. Tell us if you had a theory and if you were right.
Or if you still have theories about some of the dangling plot threads.
Maybe. That'd be nice. Hit us up. We have a collection of social medias. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're in Goodreads. We're at The Read Along in most of those places. We have an email address if you want to write us directly.
Yeah, it's thereadalong@gmail.com. And we would be delighted to hear from you.
We really would. We like people.
And with that, we'll see you next time.
For Hospital Times.
Thank you for joining us on The Read Along with your hosts Anita and Scott Bourgeois. The Read Along theme music is Mr. Exposition by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com with interstitial music Dodio by the same. Our cover art is by Aaron Beaver. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Read Along and check out our group on Goodreads.com.